If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has you covered. Check out the June and July issue of the Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. My wife and I celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary earlier this month. And it's a big deal, but it's also a time for reflection. It's a time to look back and say, wow, 30 years is a long time. It's not as long as some have been married, but it's getting up there. What are the lessons learned after 30 years? Well, Cheryl Magnus has also been married for 30 years, and she's written about it recently in The Federalist, author of a recent column there titled 13 Things I've Learned from 30 Years of Marriage. She joins us to talk about marriage lessons. She's a writer, musician, and homeschool mom in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Cheryl, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be back.
Is this what you thought marriage 30 years on would be like for you and your husband?
Well, you know, in many ways, I think it is. I'm who I am, and my husband is who he is, and I think we knew each other pretty well when we went into marriage, and so in many ways, I would have predicted where we are now. I don't think I would have predicted being married to a church musician. That was not something that was in the planned when we got married. It's a wonderful thing that happened, and it's I'm glad that it turned out that way. So, but I think, you know, being the people that we are, it's pretty much the life I would have anticipated.
So let's talk about some of the lessons that you have learned. And some of them are actually counterintuitive, and they go almost completely against the prevailing wisdom about what makes marriage work in some cases. The first one is compromise isn't always a good thing. What do you mean by that?
Well, I actually have to give credit to my mother-in-law for this one. My husband says that way back before we even got married, that this was her advice to him. And she said that if you like red wine and your wife likes white, that you shouldn't compromise and just meet halfway and get blush, because if neither one of you likes blush wine, then neither one of you is going to be happy. So her advice was, if you can, buy 2 bottles of wine so each of you can have what you would like. But if you can't do that, then you take turns. You know, the first time you buy the bottle of wine, get what the husband wants, and then next time around, get what the wife wants, and then you just enjoy seeing your spouse enjoy that bottle of wine or whatever it may be. And you get satisfaction from just being able to take turns and enjoy the enjoyment of your spouse.
Or if it's in the Wilkin house, my wife eventually won me over to white wine, so
there you go.
It worked out that way.
There you go. You might learn something new or discover something that you didn't know that you liked.
Also, counter to much of the advice that we get on marriage is that you say during a disagreement, someone has to prevail. We're often told, oh no, disagreement, there should be no winners or losers. There should be no one who, in your words, prevails. Why do you say that?
Well, I think sometimes there is just not going, I guess this goes back to compromise and is always a good thing a little bit, because sometimes there's not a compromise position. Sometimes you're going to have a disagreement and you're not going to be able to come to that middle decision. And at that point, what are you going to do? Are you going to have a standoff or are you going to make a decision? And at that point, somebody does have to finally prevail if you're going to move forward. And in our situation, what we've found is that if it's an area in which somebody has a little bit of experience or knowledge, then we tend to defer to that person. So if it's in matters of homemaking, housekeeping, that sort of thing, I tend to do more of that, so he will defer to me. If it's more of a, you know, a spiritual matter, a head of the household matter, a financial question, then I will defer to him. And that's worked well for us. You know, bottom line is somebody has to be the final word. And on that note, we do follow God's word, and the husband is the spiritual head of the household and the head of the household, period. And so when it comes to those really tough decisions, then that's the husband's and the father's role in our household. And I frankly am very glad that the final buck does not ultimately stop with me. It's a nice burden not to have.
Here's one that I've learned, and I think it's one of the more valuable things in a lot of marriages, although people, you know, marriages may differ, and that is that it's okay not to like all the same things or even to do everything together. There are all those couples that do everything together. Then there are couples like my wife and I where, you know, she has her things, I have my things, and what we like to do together is spend time with the kids and eat.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah, I think sometimes I've run into couples where there is this sense of if I want to do something and he doesn't want to come, she doesn't want to come, then my feelings are hurt. But in our marriage, we've found that it really works sometimes just to let the other person go off and do what he enjoys. And the example that I give in the article is that my husband loves the beach, he loves the ocean, and I really don't care for it that much. And so sometimes I've gone along grudgingly. Sometimes I just wave him away and tell him to have a great time. Sometimes when I do go along, he makes sure that I have my umbrella, my beach blanket, my cold drink, my comfy chair, and then I sit on the beach and watch him go play in the water, and that works really well. But yeah, you know, it's okay to separate. It's okay to pursue your individual interests and enjoyments. You don't have to be together all the time for those things.
You also say you just have to overlook some things. That's pretty general. Can you give us an example?
Well, I think those things that probably you knew were there about your spouse before you got married, if they weren't very neat to begin with, they're not going to suddenly become a neat person after 30 years of marriage, and you just do have to learn to overlook those kinds of things. A few of the examples I give in the article are just whether it's messiness or you're not a great cook. I'm not particularly fond of cooking myself, and my husband has come to accept that about me. And, you know, so these are the things that you don't want to turn into huge issues because in the grand scheme of things, they're really not that important.
Why is finger pointing something to be avoided as a lesson you've learned after 30 years of marriage?
What I found is really helpful for me when I find myself getting impatient, getting annoyed, getting bothered by something about my husband is I consciously do this. I find myself consciously doing this is when I am ready to be critical of him. And I want to say there certainly there's a place for constructive criticism. But when I'm ready to be critical of him for something possibly petty, something that shouldn't be bothering me, I consciously think about things that he has forgiven me for in the past and things that he tolerates about me, and that helps to put it all in perspective. If he can forgive and overlook, then certainly I can do the same thing.
Going to church, why is that so very important?
Studies actually do show, number of studies show that the marriage that is built upon a foundation of church attendance is less likely to end in divorce. It's going to be more stable, more long-lasting. But just apart from the studies, I think if you're going to church regularly, you're hearing law and gospel, you're receiving God's gifts, you're being forgiven in church, then it's much easier to turn around and extend that same forgiveness to your spouse that you have been given by a gracious God.
Along with that is praying together as something you found valuable after 30 years of marriage. What are you talking about there?
Yes, well, for me, as first a Roman Catholic and then as a Lutheran, praying with people is not something that just comes naturally to me. It's not something that I was brought up to do, praying out loud in the presence of others. But as a family, it's something that we have done regularly over the years with our children in family devotion. And it's truly a great form of intimacy to be able to talk to God in the presence of your loved ones, because you really do have to open and bear your soul, and it fosters a very powerful form of closeness to open yourself up in that way before God and before one another.
Cheryl Magnus is our guest, writer, musician, and homeschool mom in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. We're talking about lessons regarding marriage after 30 years, and we'll discuss children after this.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
The Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education invites you to attend our Reformation Summer Conference, July 11 through 13, 2017, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, focused on truth and education. Speakers include the Reverend Rolf Preuss, Dr. Angus Manouge, and Dr. Thomas Korchak. Enjoy this year's unique banquet experience at a Wyoming bison ranch. Visit ccle.org for more speakers and information. That's ccle.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about marriage lessons learned after 30 years with Cheryl Magnus. The Lutheran Federal Credit Union is dedicated to serving families in the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod through car loans, home loans, student loans, and more, all those kind of milestones that a couple will face over the long haul of marriage. You can check them out at lutheranfcu.org, the Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org. Cheryl, what's one of the things you've learned after 30 years of marriage about children?
Well, I've learned that if you really want to learn about self-sacrifice, that children are probably the best way to learn about that. And certainly in marriage, the sacrifice of the self, making room for the other person, is one of the most important things. And having children teaches you that in a big way. So being open to the blessing of children in your marriage is certainly going to be a great blessing to both of you.
And after 30 years, I know that your husband is, as you mentioned before, a church musician, something you didn't expect. And that's a very consuming profession, no doubt about it. Are there still things that you find to do together?
Yes, I think it's something that you really have to work on, especially as you have children and your lives become more busy with children, with family life, with your occupations and so forth. And sometimes that gets the best of you, and you sort of wake up and you realize, what have we done together lately? And, you know, date night is one great idea for addressing that. Something that we have done in the past and that we hope to do again in the future is to take a class together. We had a great time a few years back with ballroom dancing and just carving out that time together, going out to a class, learning something new together. You discover new things about each other that you can appreciate, and you also maybe discover new things about each other that you can practice your forbearance with, practice that toleration that we talked about earlier.
Was there a time when you thought that you could change or would change your husband?
I think that's one of the things that, probably one of the things that is the secret to our long-lastingness in marriage, is that we really did not try to do that. And I'm not sure exactly why at the ages of 22 and 23 we were smart enough to know even then that we should not try to change each other. But I think that's one of the pieces of advice that I would give to young people going into marriage today, is that this person that you're getting ready to promise a lifetime of commitment to is the person that you're going to be married to for the next 30, 40, 50 years. And he or she is not likely going to change very much. You're going to learn things together. You're going to hopefully grow in your understanding of one another, and your relationship and your own maturity as you age, but you're going to be the person that you are, and you should not expect there to be major changes in either one of you. And if you go into a relationship expecting that, then that's going to be a big problem right off the bat.
There are two of your lessons that kind of go hand in hand. One of them is always protect each other's reputations, and the other is be each other's advocate. Those are really two different ways of saying the same thing. How would you explain it?
I'll go back to my mother-in-law on this. Very early in our marriage, she told my husband that she was struck by her sense that we were each other's greatest advocate. And that really meant a lot to me to hear her say that, because that's one thing that I think we've always tried to do. Sometimes I see married couples in public teasing each other, and there's teasing, and then there's, I think, something that goes beyond that, that is almost a kind of a shaming, or there's an unkindness to it. And that is something that we strongly avoid. We always try to build each other up in public. And sometimes I've gotten grief, a little bit of grief for that, in fact, perhaps celebrating my husband too much, because I am very proud of him. And I think he's proud of me as well. But I think that's our role as a married couple, is to stand by one another, protect one another's reputations. And that doesn't mean that you can't confide in good friends if you're having challenges in the marriage or if you're having problems. But make sure that those friends that you turn to for comfort and assistance are people that are on your side as a married couple. And they're going to help you to remember what you love about that person, to see the good in that person. They're going to help you to try to uphold that relationship.
The final thing that you've learned after 30 years of marriage is one of those lessons that the earlier you learn it, the better things are, really, truly, and that is forgiveness. Talk about it.
Yes, well, you know, we're all sinful creatures, and that plays out in marriage as well as in all the other aspects of our lives. And so we have to be willing in marriage to forgive and to forgive again, and sometimes to forgive the same sin the same bad behavior against one another over and over and over again. But if we are willing to do that, as Christ does for us, then, you know, we can look forward to 30 years of marriage, and hopefully in our case even 40 or 50 years is what I'm hoping, maybe even 60.
When people start out, Cheryl, they talk about spending their life together, wanting to share their lives together, their whole life together, even have the vows that reflect that kind of a commitment at the beginning of marriage. How does that commitment, how does that prospect of sharing a life together seem different now that you've actually shared at least half a life together with your husband?
I was thinking about this earlier today, actually, and I think that I think a lot of times today when people go into a marital relationship, they almost look at the spouse as a friend. I'm choosing this friend that I want to spend my life with. I think when you look at your spouse as a friend, you're looking at that as a relationship that maybe if it becomes inconvenient, if it becomes no longer fun, then we can just decide we're not going to be friends anymore. But what I've come to realize is that the marital relationship is a lot more like a family relationship. You don't choose your family. You don't choose who you're going to be born to. You don't choose your siblings or your children. You're in that. You're stuck in that for the long haul. And I think that if we all looked at our spouses as more of, you know, one flesh, family, that we would maybe have a better understanding of the kind of commitment that is required. It's just a matter of not even allowing into your head the concept that I can choose to walk away from this relationship because it's become inconvenient. Now, certainly even in family situations, extreme situations, sometimes, you know, there are exceptions to that rule. But in general, I think if we just thought about our spouses more as truly family, we would have a better understanding of the depth of the relationship and the need for our commitment to it.
Cheryl Magnus is a writer, musician, and homeschool mom in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled 13 Things I've Learned from 30 Years of Marriage. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Gracie Olmsted is with us on the other side of the break. You've noticed it. I know you have. People treating their politics with the same fervor as they would a religion. We'll talk about that with her after this.
Children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.